Welcome to Leveraging Leadership, where we unpack the art of business leadership. I'm your host, Emily Sander, former chief of staff turned executive leadership coach. And this show is all about finding your greatest points of influence and leveraging them to better serve those around you. And today we are joined by Zoe Thompson. Hi, Zoe.
Hi.
You have a cool accent, so I think our U.S. listeners will be tapped into this one just to listen to you.
I'll put on my best Queen's English for you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining. It's a pleasure to have you on. And just to give folks a little bit of background, you are a former international strong woman competitor. I believe there's a picture of you on the internet deadlifting a car or something.
So, yeah, there's quite a few pictures out there of lifting all things very odd.
That's impressive.
Heavy.
Yeah. That's impressive. You also served in the UK police service for 20 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And now you are coaching and mentoring around well-being, so physical and mental well-being. And you are a practitioner for NLP and CBT. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. All and right. There's some positive psychology elements in there as well. So I like to use a mix of modalities with the people that I work with.
Okay. Beautiful. So starting at the beginning, what made you want to compete in the International Strong Woman competition?
That's a great question. And the very short answer is I didn't. I'd never planned to go in and compete. So I was going through a bit of a phase in life where I was really challenging myself to say yes to different opportunities. So I had gone through a bit of a rough period and my self-esteem confidence was really low. And I'd been working on my physical health and was also trying to work on my emotional and mental health, if you like, in just really challenging myself to say yes to different opportunities where I knew that I really wanted to say no, but not because I didn't want to do them, but because I just lacked that confidence. So Strong Women came about because I was in the gym. One of the other girls that I had been training in a group with had said that there was a gym doing an open day. Would I go down with her? Because she didn't want to go on her own. Okay, yes. So went down. And it was good. It was okay, but I wasn't completely blown away until we were leaving. And the person who was showing us around said, does anybody want to pull a car? And I was like, oh, okay. Now you have piqued my interest. We put a harness on, went out onto the road, hooked up to the cars, and there were about four of us just pulling this car up and down the street. And then as we got more confident, we were getting people to get in the car to make it heavier. And people were like in and leaning out the windows, and it just made it very cool. And then as we were leaving, the gym owner said, oh, ladies, you know, I'm putting on a competition in a couple of months. It would be great if you signed up. It's like, oh, okay, yes.
So, yes.
And that's really how it all started. So I went to my first competition locally in the November. And a year later, so this is a very long story cut short, but a year later, I was competing at Europe's Strongest Woman. So to say, you know, the meme says, isn't it? Well, that escalated quickly. It really did, because it went from local amateur competitions to the regional qualifiers, to England's Strongest Woman, to Britain's Strongest Woman, to Europe's Strongest Woman within a 12-month period. So
wow.
Yeah, it was not planned. It was just one of those things of saying yes, putting 100% in, seeing where that took me. Another opportunity would come up. I would say yes, put the work in. It would lead to another opportunity. So yeah, that's how it all happened.
A year is not that long.
No, and it's not long when you're also a single parent and working full time. You know, there's a lot of other priorities that are happening in that time as well. So it wasn't as if that was the only thing I did. I was also juggling other priorities as well.
And just curious, were you athletic before? Did you play sports?
So it depends on what year you look at. So if you look at like the beginning of this journey for me, prior to 2010, massively overweight, didn't do any sport, and very, very, very rarely left the house other than to go to work, would leave the house, go to work, come home again. And then that was the start of my journey, was to start to lose the weight, get into fitness. And then that just really snowballed. So at the point where I did the first competition, I was training, I was doing lots of strength and conditioning, and I was in pretty good shape. And I, you know, my PT would say, you know, you're the strongest one here, but you know, where does that really place you in the big picture? And he was the one that kind of pushed me to go and test that in and amongst the other women across the country. And turns out I was up there with them. So
yes, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, gone from overweight and doing this as a side hustle, and you're able to make it to the top rounds in your country and in your region. That's impressive.
Yeah, it was a very fast-paced 12 months.
So how did that whole experience, are there lessons that you've taken forward into what you're doing now? How did that change you?
Oh, hugely. I think for me, one of the biggest things that I found pushing myself in the gym is a very controlled environment. So you're with people who are very encouraging, but it's also that very controlled environment that you know, you have your plan, you have your routine. So you know that on this day, you've got to go in and you've got to lift these things at this weight this many times, and then you get to go home again. But it pushes you because it takes away the decision making, which is what I loved about it, because somebody else was making those decisions for me. All I had to do was follow the plan. But I found that going into the gym that I was pushing myself a lot more following the plan than I would have done if I was on my own. And so it really helped me to start to question, like, what is possible? Like, where is the top of my potential? You know, because as we know, with lots of things, you know, other people see that potential before we see it ourselves. Yeah. My PT saw it in me. Certainly, you know, when I was in employment, there were managers that I had or mentors that I had that saw that potential before I was able to see it. But I think the gym helped me to realize that pushing past that point where you thought you were at your limit just revealed this next layer. And I found that the more confident I got in the gym and the more I got used to getting uncomfortable, pushing myself past what I thought was possible, the more I'd started to do it elsewhere. And what coincided with that was I ended up going for jobs and promotions in work. You know, I started to say yes to different opportunities. It's like, well, if I can do that over there, then I can speak up in a meeting. I can put an application in for a job. I can challenge something that I don't feel is very fair. I can speak up about things that little bit more. So it kind of unlocked this side of me that I think had been dormant for a little while. I think it was always there. I think if you spoke to my parents and talked about me as a child, I think they would tell you that it was always there, but I think it had been dormant for a little while. And I think it just unlocked all of that for me.
Well, had been kind of pushed down and then it was unleashed. And I know you have Phoenix Coaching as your name. So something in there. But I think it's true that if people think, okay, what is the maximum I can do? And they think of like, okay, if I stretch myself, if I push myself, I could get here. And whatever here is about 40% of your true capacity and your true potential. I remember we had a soccer practice or a football practice, and our coach made us run 17s, which is you sprint the long way of the soccer field or football pitch 17 times without stopping. And then everyone's dead at the end and just breathing and bent over and falling down. And he said, remember this moment because this is what makes a champion, and you're at about 40%. And I was like, I'm at like 110%. But then we did drills and we could carry on. And so it proved to ourselves we could do that. And at the end of that practice, he said, raise your hand if you did something this practice you didn't think you could do. And everyone raised their hand. And that was the lesson. And that was the takeaway. So very similar to your process. So
I guess it's so easy to put the cap on it, isn't it? It's so easy to think that that's where your ceiling is and not recognize that there's other layers and levels right above that.
It's especially true if you have other people putting that cap on you. So it sounds like you were lucky and I was lucky with parents and coaches who were encouraging, but that one comment from a teacher or from a friend or from an adult when you're growing up, that you're not good at something or you'll never amount to something, that can shape you and leave an impact. So sometimes we have to reforge ourselves which you are helping people do now. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit. So for people who don't know, what is NLP?
So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It's been around for a little while, but it's ultimately how we talk to ourselves. It's that the language of the mind is I think one of the nicest ways of explaining it. But it's also it's got 10 different principles that others have added to that. But it looks at how we have that inner dialogue, how we talk ourselves, how we see ourselves. And so they talk about the map is not the territory. You know, that which we see may not be what is true. You know, we can both, you know, the two of us could be in the same room, have the same experience, but we would see it, feel it, and experience it in two very different ways because of the way that we process that and the way that we put that through our frame of reference. And, you know, I think that's such a key part. And it's one of the great parts of coaching is helping people to explore those different perspectives, because people will have that go-to. They'll have that set narrative. They'll put things through their own framework. They'll put things through their own process the way they've always done that, which means they'll quite often see things the way they've always seen them. And what I love as a coach is being able to ask those questions that help people to explore and look at those different perspectives and see things that little bit differently. And it's a standing joke with people that I work with, because sometimes I think one of the most powerful coaching conversations is literally just me saying, and what else? And what else? And what else could it be? And what else? And what else could it be? And what else? And people will sit there and you can see them thinking, what is it she wants me to say? And I'm like, I don't want you to, I'm not waiting for a particular answer. I just want you to explore all the different possibilities and expand that thinking so that you can see those different perspectives and see what other options might be available to you that you might not normally consider. And the other thing that I really love about NLP, and one of the best questions I think anyone has ever asked me, is if you were not you, thinking the way that you think, having experienced the things that you've experienced, how might you see and feel this differently?
Mm. Interesting.
And that's such a big question. And I think you think about the person sitting next to you, like how would they see this experience? How would they experience this? How might they think about this differently? You know, if I sat with you, you know, on different, having grown up on different sides of the world, different parents, different ways of thinking, different experiences, how might we process things differently? But I love that. I love sitting with people who have had different experiences, who think differently, because that's where you learn and that's where it really expands your thinking. So I love NLP for that. And I think NLP would be my go-to, perhaps more so than CBT and other methodologies, because it just blows people's minds sometimes in just asking those questions to help people to just almost flip the coin. You know, if you've gone through life always seeing tails and then suddenly you help them to realize that there's a different side with a head on it, it's like, how that can open up how their life might now be, being able to see things differently. So it's very exciting as a coach. I get very excited.
When you asked that question, I literally like had an out-of-body experience with like, okay, what if I was in this person's shoes? And it was like, interesting, but very, very different. And I think, you know, often the first step is realizing, oh, there are so many different perspectives and experiences. Okay, that's step one. And then step two is, let me really think, if I was in her shoes, how would I be feeling and interpreting this situation? Which is a great question to ask. So
yeah. And I think also just recognizing that you have choice, mm-hmm. that you can just decide to think about things differently. You can just decide to see things differently or feel things, feel about things differently. You are in control of those things. Some things are more difficult to change because of our repetitions and patterns of behavior, but ultimately they're learned. So if they're not working for us, we can learn something different if we are open to that and prepared to put the work in to do that. But it's definitely possible seeing it happen.
Well, you had mentioned being scared to speak up in a team meeting. And I work with clients who that's, you know, Emily, I'm bad at communication. I'm bad with people. I don't have anything valuable to say. And it is a matter of, okay, well, just pretend for a second that you were someone who felt confident and knew that you were on the team for a reason and knew that you had valuable information the team needed to hear about. How would you show up in that meeting? Just as a hypothetical. Oh, well, in that case, I would do this, this, and this. So, and then we go into, okay, this is your lens, the lens you are wearing right now. And if you switch that out for a different one, you might show up differently in that meeting.
So true. It's that act as if, isn't it? Of, yeah, act as if you are able to do those things. Act as if that thing has already happened. Act as if you feel differently about it. It's, yeah, it's so powerful.
And it's people often wait for the feeling of confidence before they do something. And it's the action, is taking the action and then proving to yourself, oh, I am someone who does that. Okay, now I have the confidence.
Yes, I talk to people about this all the time. There's the action of doing things confidently, which you can practice, you can rehearse. You know, that's your body language, your tone, your pace, your inflection. That's the action of doing things confidently. That's kind of the fake it till you make it. You know, you might not feel it, but you can do the action, and that's what people see. But the more you do that, the more you put yourself in that position, the more your brain recognizes, oh, She could do this. She's all right at this. And then that's what builds that feeling and that emotion of confidence. But yeah, you're right. I see exactly the same thing. People are waiting until they feel confident to do something, or they feel motivated to do something, or they feel disciplined. It's like people don't feel disciplined. Discipline is an action. You have to do the thing and then the feelings come after. But it's interesting. I literally just had a client and she said, you know, I just want to feel differently about it. And I just want to understand my feelings. But feelings aren't always logical. Sometimes feelings are just that. They're thoughts, they're feelings. And sometimes we just have to allow them to pass through and let them go. And we don't need to give them too much attention. And sometimes we need to stop waiting for those feelings to come in and just do the thing that we know will bring us the results that we want.
Yes. And it's sometimes, if you're waiting to feel fully confident and you're waiting to be ready, you'll be waiting for a very long time. You'll be waiting forever. So take the action. And I think it's interesting. I want your opinion on this, because a lot of people, they'll take their feelings and emotions and they'll fuse that with, this is who I am and this is true. Mm-hmm. And really, there's a lot of space in between those two things. I mean, feelings are, I'm not saying they're fake, they're there. But they're, like you said, it's kind of like clouds and the sky. So the sky is there and the clouds will come and go. And those are kind of like feelings.
Yeah. And it's this saying with behaviors, isn't it? People will attach the behaviors to their character as well. But ultimately, we can feel all the feels and we can do all of the behaviors. We've all got capability to be really, really angry. And we've also got capability to be very passive and very quiet and very, you know, all of the things on the other end of the spectrum. And in the same with emotions, we can feel every emotion on that scale. But that's not who we are. That's not our character and that's not our attribute. That's something that we do and that we feel in moments, and it comes and it goes. And it's how we choose to hold on to that. So that emotional reaction is not necessarily what we want to hold on to for that emotional state, because quite often that initial reaction isn't helpful to us. So it tells us that something is important, but we probably don't want to hold on to that initial emotion that we feel. We want to channel something else that's going to give us the outcome that we're looking for. So recognizing what is that initial spark and then what is it we want to feel that's going to help us to deal with what we're dealing with is really important. But again, it's recognizing that we are somewhat in control of that, because a lot of people, I think, feel that they're not. And so just allow that to be very consuming and try and work with it rather than work through it.
And it feels like it's happening to you. Like, this is something happening to me and I'm not in control. And you can sit there and be with it, and then it will pass. I mean, if you think about it, we know this when we think about it, because we've been angry before, we've been sad before, we've been scared before, but we're not perpetually in that state anymore. And so it does pass. But I think the energy you give it and the focus you give it is important. So you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I've I've come to my coach with things. I'm like, okay, here's the problem and here's how I feel and here's option A and here's option B. And I want to think about this in 12 different angles. And one of the things they said was, how much time and energy do you want to be giving this? And I was like, oh, okay. So very little. And I'm giving it all of my attention. So it's kind of the big screen right in front of my face and I can't see anything else. And it's maybe like, oh, I'm, you know what? That will sort itself out. Something will happen. Something will unfold tomorrow and I'll find out what. And I'm not going to give it my undivided time and energy. So that is also a choice.
Yeah. And I get people, I get clients to like fill in the gaps of a sentence. So I feel the emotion because what this is important to me. So I, you know, in emotions, from my perspective, emotions are telling you that something is important. Like if you didn't feel strongly about it, there wouldn't be that emotional response. So what does that emotion tell you is important? That's where you put your focus. So if you know that you feel angry because respect is important to you, then you put your focus in, okay, how do I get that respect? Or how do I manage that I haven't been respected? And how do I manage the situation rather than manage that emotion? It's like we can't, the emotion is an information tool.
It's a messenger.
Then, yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that.
No, it means it's telling you, hey, you're bumping up against one of your values. What is that value that's important to you?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's important. I think sit with it is an interesting term. I think you can sit with it, but I think a lot of people give that too much, like exactly what you said, give it too much attention. I think you need to take notice of it. I think sit, for me, the term sitting with it implies a little bit longer. So I'm like, notice it, observe it, acknowledge it, and then what's next?
Yes. In NLP, is there a physicality component?
As in the sort of the somatic connection?
Yeah, I've heard like power poses and different things where we were kind of talking about you take the action and then you build that confidence. Is it, you know, I've heard people hit a power pose before you go into a big meeting and you'll have the energy and confidence coursing through your body. So I was wondering if that's in your version of NLP.
Yes, and certainly the work that I've done and in from a sport perspective of, you know, we used to in competitions when we were watching competitions, you would observe how people walk to the platform, you know, because quite often that would indicate the conversation that's going on in their mind. But I'm a big fan of basketball. So, you know, I did a talk with the team, one of the junior teams the other week, and we were talking about body language on court. And I said, you know that you are looking at that other team's body language. You are looking for the first sign that they are doubting themselves, that they're questioning themselves, and that chatter is going on between them rather than directed at you. So you need to make sure that you are managing your body language, that you don't give them that information. So your heads need to be up. You need to be walking on court looking like you are confident that you've got this game in the bag. Even if you're questioning it, you need to do that. But I think also recognizing that when you embody that your brain will pick up on that and will feed into that as well. So if you're telling yourself that you're nervous and you're losing and it's a really bad game and it's the worst game ever and nobody's doing well, your body's going to respond to that. So your adrenaline will shoot up. You know, you'll be in that fight, flight and freeze rather than where you want to be, which is confident and focused. So it's all so connected. We do it in work, in interviews, you know, getting that into that physical state that helps that calm, dropping your shoulders, lifting your chin, smiling, eye contact before you go in, answer those questions. It all is so connected, but how we talk to ourselves impacts how we feel and our body language and also our physical state also impacts our mental state. So if you're feeling lethargic, the best thing you can do is get up and move. You know, get up, jump, have a quick jump around, and get yourself moving and change your physical state. That will help change how you think and how you feel. We tend to give into it so much more.
We do. And the one that I fall prey to is I feel tired. It's like, oh, I'm so tired. And when you say that, of course, you become more tired. And so what I've trained myself to do is when I feel a little tired, I say, I'm full of energy. I'm full of energy. I'm full of energy. And your body perks up because that's what you're telling it to do. But to the physicality piece, I remember I would be in team meetings around a big conference room. And usually I was the youngest, possibly the only woman, and I was on the smaller side. And so I heard about sit like with your arms out on the armrests and kind of take up space because that's just projecting a certain thing. And I didn't feel that way in those meetings. I was like, make me small. No one look at me. Is there a corner I can hide in? But when I did that, I was like, oh, no, I'm actually a team member who adds value and I belong at this table. And so that just that little motion kind of made me
similar for me. I mean, I was in senior management in my early 30s as a female police staff, so civilian managing police officers. So certainly there were a lot of people who questioned whether or not I had a place in the room, even though I did definitely earned my place there. But it's that same thing of, you know, making sure that your presence is felt and also that your voice is heard as well. So one of the best pieces of advice I was given by a female senior officer was when you go into those conference rooms to make conversation with people in there. And when people sit down, to do something that shows people that you're there. So whether it's getting up and saying, can you pass me the jug of water? Or does anybody mind if I open the window? That what you're saying is, I'm here. I'm going to be here today. And I probably have some things to contribute. And also to then make sure that people notice that you are in the room. I think mirroring the body language of the chair in the meeting, you know, the looking at people who look really confident in the meeting and mirroring people's body language, it's a good distraction as well, because you can look around the room to see all different ways that people are sitting, but also making sure that you do contribute in those meetings, even if it is to agree with people. And I think that's another great way of making sure that people recognize that you are in the room, but also adding the value. And I think a lot of people worry that they're not going to say the same as what everybody else is saying, but actually that's the contribution. We need people to share something different because that's what adds to the value in the room. But I think even if you're not comfortable in those situations of just saying, I think that's a really great point, you're still there. You're still saying, I'm here for a reason. I'm still contributing and your voice is still heard. And I think that's a great introduction to just get comfortable with, say, I really like that point. Or I know, I think that's a really interesting point. And then sit back. Just observe.
I like that because it also shows that you're engaged, so you're listening. Mm-hmm. And two, you have an opinion. So you're listening to that and you're forming an opinion and you're sharing your opinion, even if it's in a brief statement like that.
And then the next meeting, you can say, I really like that point and I would love to add, and then you can add something to it. So I think a lot of people get nervous about disagreeing. And so that takes a little bit more confidence, I think. But I think just, you know, start with agreeing, start with getting your voice in the room, then start with agreeing and then start with agreeing. And I'd love to add. So again, you're adding positives. It's not challenging. It's not anything that's likely to, you know, start a conversation that you then feel like you're in debate or it's a conflict conversation. But I think just introduce it slowly. It's just those small steps, the incremental changes of just starting to get comfortable in those spaces. And it does take a little bit of time, that's for sure.
I like those steps because they're baby steps and you can ease yourself in and you can apply, you know, judgment on what situation, what room you're in, on which things you do. The piece about the contrarian point of view, though, that's really interesting because if you do offer a contrarian point of view, so like 10 people are in the room, like, yes, that's great. Yes, I agree. And then you're like, have we thought about this? Or have we thought through this perspective? To me, that's so confident. I'm like, oh my gosh, if someone is sitting there saying that, they are super confident. So that might be a way to put the action out there and then have that confidence come to you.
I think if you're not yet comfortable with adding the contrarian point of view, ask a question. So rather than you add that in of that you feel differently about it? To say, okay, you know, does any, you know, like you said, have we thought about, or but also of, can I ask you to expand on this, or can I ask somebody to add some detail to this to help my understanding? So your it's almost a coaching question that helps bring something else into the mix without you adding it in there. But again, it's just what you feel comfortable with. But I think also what I used to do was have in my notebook, at the back of my notebook, I would write down things that people said that I really liked. So things that sounded really confident, or the way people introduced questions or introduced ideas. Oh, that sounded really good. So I would make a little note. And then perhaps the next time I was in a meeting, challenge myself to use one of those, or find a way that felt comfortable for me, because everybody has different styles and uses different terminologies. I think just finding what works for you.
Finding it in your own words so it sounds authentic to you. Yes, you're not parroting someone else.
Yeah, but using words that you're not 100% sure of what they mean.
What they mean, yeah. One thing, we have so much to cover, but just one thing, how do people deal with their physical health? So, I mean, there's the standard, like sleep and hydrate and eat good foods that energize and fuel you. Is there anything else, words of advice that you could give people on that front?
I think rest and sleep is massively underestimated as to the impact that it can have. And I think especially with people who are very driven and, you know, tend to be very successful people, they do tend to neglect the rest and sleep. And I think a lot of people recognize the importance of sleep, but not necessarily the rest and the downtime. So certainly the people that I work with, the busier they are, the more we have to make sure that they prioritize having that downtime. And that does mean that quite often they will put that into their calendar as a commitment to slow down and to have some downtime. And in fact, one of my clients put into the group chat the other day to say they recognize, looking ahead at their schedule, that they had two very, very busy weeks back to back. So they wanted to make sure that they didn't make any plans in that weekend in between. And they were looking for ideas of what to call those weekends. You know, do you call it a do not disturb weekend, or a rest and recovery weekend? But I think it sparked that conversation within the group of, that's a really good idea. And giving yourself permission to do that, that it's okay to not have anything planned in, that it's okay to not have anything scheduled or any arrangements made. Because actually, especially if you're an introvert and you need time out to recover and re-energize, that's really important. So I think most people know that sleep is really important, but I think slowing down, it's almost controversial, isn't it? Especially if you're successful. You know, what do you mean? You took a weekend off, or
lazy?
You didn't have
How lazy are you? Yeah. You could have gotten work done. Yeah, that's so interesting. I remember I had a client who was extremely driven, and every hour of the day was accounted for and was optimized to be productive. And she went to the gym, and you know what kind of workout she did? She did HIIT, so high intensity interval training, which is just like, you know, jamming your system up even higher. And we tried something where she would do yoga or meditate during that half hour instead. And at first she was like, no, like, this is not me. Like, this is not productive. I need to go. And just by doing that, she got so much more out of just doing yoga or just sitting there and getting calm. Cause overall, holistically, health-wise, that was far better for her than doing the HIIT workout. So what you said reminded me of that one.
What I remind people is that, you know, and going this way, it links back to the strength training. Before competition, we take a week of rest.
Deload.
An active rest. An active deload week where we eat lots, we sleep lots, and we do very little. It's the best week. But it's really hard. If you're used to training lots of hours, and it would be lots of stretching, lots of active recovery. But that deload week was really, really important. And then you fuel the tank, and you're good to go. But we need that mentally and emotionally as much as we do physically. So I think it's really important. And I think there's a bit of a badge of honor around busyness, isn't there? And being productive and all of those things. But we're human beings, not just human doings. And I think that actually having a little bit of a slower pace is not beneficial. Now, I use the analogy. So we call them motorways, and see, they would be highways for you, and you've got even more lanes on your highways, don't you? We only get to three. That's enough for those, and actually not even all of our drivers know how to use the three lanes properly. But I use that analogy to say you can't be in that fast lane all the time because you'll burn your engine out. You know, it's really important to recognize, when do you speed up? When do you ease off? When do you need to stop into the service station and take a bit of a break and refuel? When do you rejoin again? Because you're still going to get to the end destination, but you're going to get there in one piece and with some fuel left in the tank and with a car that still works, rather than kind of arriving at that end destination with nothing left to give and ending up, you know, with that burnout and needing to recover. And I think people are not so good at speeding up and slowing down, speeding up and slowing down. It's that kind of full throttle, burnout, collapse, illness, recovery, full throttle, let's go again. And I think actually just easing off and using all of the lanes and knowing when to take a pit stop is really important.
Use all your lanes and take a pit stop. And I think it's really interesting that you took a deload week right before your competition. So right before you had to be at peak performance, you did an active rest week. So I think that's a tell for how we can operate. And I also love what you said about it is a badge of honor to be productive. So especially in America, you know, hey, how are you? How's it going? How are you doing? Oh, I'm so busy. Like, I just have so many things going on. It's like, yes.
Same here.
Yeah. And so it's like, I'm wondering what the alternative version where I can brag about, is it rested? I'm so balanced. I'm so present. It's got to be something opposite, but that should be the new cool
it's
thing.
It's really interesting. I have an American friend who I met through basketball years ago, but he always says, what's good with you? And I love that question because it means I can answer about all of the things that are good. And it's not about work. It's not necessarily about how busy I've been or how I am or how I feel in the moment. It's like, what's good with you?
I like that.
You know, I just think it feels like such an American expression. Whenever I say, oh, what's good with you? I sound like, I sound like I'm trying to get down with the kids, and it's not that at all. It feels like it doesn't quite land, but I think it's just such a nice expression. And the other thing that is an American saying, which I think is also lovely, you say, oh, I really appreciate you.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, like we say thank you, but I think thank you can kind of roll off the tongue and be quite meaningless. Whereas like, I appreciate you. I'm like, ooh.
That's a lot of feeling for a British person. Yeah, that's
we don't, that's about our limit, I think. But yeah, I think what's good with you and, you know, what's going on with you right now, and being able to talk about, like, you know, asking those questions that give the opportunity to say something more than, I'm so busy.
Yes. I love what's good with you. I mean, we do say that in America, and it frames the question. It frames the answer. Like, you need to give me the good things that are happening in your world.
Yeah.
So excellent.
Which is also quite British of don't moan at me, because when I'm asking how you are, I don't actually want you to tell me. I just think
I'm just acknowledging that I see you. Yes. Your presence. I remember I had a customer from the UK, and they gave our company a rave review, but it sounded like this. I just want to acknowledge that we work with this company and we've been very pleased with their service across the years. And for him, that was like a high praise. That was high compliment.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Gosh.
Yeah. But it was very, very demure, like very subdued. Yeah. But that was how he conveyed his happiness with our service. So excellent. Well, Zoe, you've shared a whole bunch of great information, and there's lots of tools and concepts and little tips and tricks that you've scattered throughout the conversation. So people are going to be able to pick those up and apply them and hopefully implement them in their lives for the better. If someone is interested to learn more about you or your work, where is the best place to go?
Best place is to head to the website. Everything is linked in there. I'm on all the socials, but if you head to the website, which is phoenixlifecoach.co.uk, everything is there. I have a newsletter with a free download, which is on values, actually, which is something that you picked up on. So there's a values, I identify what your values are and look to see how life aligns with what your values are. That's the free download. But yeah, head to the website and you can find out more about me. There's a Red Bull video from my strong woman days, which is eight minutes, 10 days of filming, down to 8 minutes, but it's there. But more than happy if people have got questions and they want to make contact, and more than happy for people to reach out. But thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, beautiful. Go see the video of Zoe lifting a car, if nothing else, if you do nothing else. So excellent. Well, we'll have all the information in the show notes, but thank you once again. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Help us in our mission to cultivate and promote exceptional leadership. A simple like or share of this episode can go a long way. Emily, me, the British guy, and the United Kingdom extend its gratitude.